Having sex-related conversations with our children is the most difficult part in our parenting journey. So today we are going to have a conversation about how to have a sex-related conversation with your child.
Our guest, Parinita Ganesh, a mental health professional, has answered 3 listener questions for parents of as young as 4-year-olds until their children hit puberty. She has beautifully explained how we should approach this as a parent, the specific words and phrases that we should use. Basically, we have brought to you the real conversation demos that you can use as is when you're having sex-related conversation with your child.
It is an empowering episode, so please take time out to listen till the end. You will find answers to how to explain personal boundaries, consent, and kissing. What is the right age for it? How and when to talk about good touch and bad touch?
Or is it safe and unsafe touch?
Why do children touch their private body parts? And how should parents talk it out?
And so many smaller but important things that have come up in our chat, which are so useful and we all should make a mental note of as parents.
So save this link if you have to, add it to your queue of podcasts or download it. Whatever suits you, but don't miss it. Hi, welcome to Partners in Upbringing. I'm Kalyani.
I'm Himani.
And we are parents just like you.
Always on a lookout. So come join us in our endeavor as we connect with parenting experts and fellow inspiring parents to know the best practices for raising happy and confident children.
Visit partnersinupbringing.com for podcasts, videos, blogs, and to connect with experts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Partners in Upbringing.
You can listen to us on your favorite podcasting app, Partners in Upbringing, your trusted partner in your parenting journey.
I know that I should be the one talking about sex-related topics with my child because I don't want the world to introduce it to him and I don't know how they would do that. But whenever this topic pops up, I just don't know how to handle it. And all these questions which are thrown at me make me very, very uncomfortable.
It's really, really tough. You know, I also get very stressed and actually more than stressed, confused about what to say when, you know, something like this comes my way from my daughter and how much to tell them, what to say, what not to say. That's more important, I think. But I've realized that there is no doubt that the kids today are going to be exposed to sex-related conversations early on in life than the previous generations. But the problem lies with us parents because we don't know how to cope with this fast-forward progress, you know. So,
and at least in my house, I don't know why, but all these questions are only directed to me. And I'm like, how should I handle this? Can somebody please help? There has to be a way out wherein we are aware of how to approach this and not lead our children in an unknown world. We are going to address this challenge, but a bit differently. We are going to have listener questions answered today by our expert, which will give us a demonstration of how to have a conversation related to sex with our children.
We are pleased and delighted to have with us today Parinita Ganesh from Mumbai. Parinita is a freelance mental health professional. She offers counseling and training to individuals, groups, corporates, and NGOs. She holds a postgraduate degree in counseling and a master's of social work from the SNDT University. And she has worked with HEAL, which is Help Eradicate Abuse Through Learning, in a capacity of a program director and has done tremendous amount of work in the field of sex education. Hi, Parinita.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's welcome, pleasure. Welcome to Partners in Upbringing. It is such a pleasure to have you today with us.
It's an absolute honor, also because I get to be with dear friends after so many years. I'm so excited to be here.
It's completely our pleasure.
Parinita, it is really awkward and tough for us parents to answer questions related to sex and have a conversation around it.
Absolutely. I'm in the same boat, even though I professionally work in this space, right? That's what you introduced me as, somebody who's worked in the space of, you know, not just child safety, but comprehensive sexuality education. So what I do want you to know is that I'm a parent too. And no matter how well versed you are with the topics and, you know, how well versed you are with, you know, what to say, how to say it, I still have to practice it in my head before I say it out loud. So I get it. It makes sense.
Wow. Actually, that is one of the reasons why we've chosen conversations, or rather a demonstrative kind of an approach today.
Yeah.
So we'll be having three listener questions.
Great.
Which we'll address.
So, but before that, we would like to set a tone for this. We would like to give a basis to this conversation by understanding that no matter, you know, how educated we are living in 21st century, we know that sex is something which is unavoidable and you really can't control as a parent because the environment doesn't allow you to. In spite of knowing everything, why do we still tend to avoid it? Why do we still brush it under the carpet, you know, when questions are thrown at us by our kids? Why does this happen to us?
Well, let me be a little picky here for a second, all right? What you mentioned a few seconds ago was sex is unavoidable. If you think about it, why should it be something that can be avoided in the first place or should be avoided in the first place? Unavoidable sort of also gives it a little bit of a
negative connotation.
Yeah, negative connotation. And that was exactly your question, right?
Yes.
But what I meant to say was that that's how we have been brought up.
It's a very hush-hush thing.
Yeah, because also because like the three of us are Indian, middle class, urban women. So we, the three of us can still talk about this today, you know, 30 years hence and 40 years hence and 50 years hence. But the reason why we are able to do that is also because we have found ourselves to be curious individuals. Mm-hmm. You're able to ask me this question without shame attached to our sexual development in general.
Right.
Now, since you've asked me that question, let me get into that. Why? Why is it so hush-hush? Why is it so shrouded in shame? I guess because that's what our parents told us it was. That's where that's what the culture told us it was. And there is so much confusion related to sexuality in general. So also, you know, when we talk about how do we introduce children to sex or comprehensive sexuality education, immediately the parents, you know, almost shrivel up into tiny little balls and want to roll away somewhere only because, you know, we assume that it's only talking about sex. But the truth is that these are smaller conversations that have to be had over a period of time, over and over again. You know, just so that you're able to catch up with one another as well, you know. If a child is asking you a certain question, that child is obviously old enough to get an honest answer.
It's a big one, actually.
Yeah, right?
So we should not hesitate giving the answer.
Yeah, and you know what?
This question is, he is just 6 or he's just 8 and how can he know about everything? What if he goes and tries, or what if he asks me more questions?
And you know, there's this I read this in one of the books, so it's called Sex Positive Talks to Have with Kids. Quite literally, if a child is asking you a question, they're old enough to receive an honest answer, and it blew my mind, you know.
I think it also, because like you broke it down for us, that why there's an awkwardness, because there's shame attached to it, because there's a negative emotion, sentiment attached to it. So I think by being honest about it with our children, we're actually trying to build a positive sentiment around sex.
Right.
When you do that, we hopefully are equipping them to handle everything related to that, you know, in the right way.
In a healthy manner, right?
In a healthy manner. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. And these conversations will have to be different for different kinds of families. I'm assuming that a lot of us have grown up with our grandparents. You know, we have to take everybody together considering we are raising these children within a community. Now, why the shame also, right? Why the shame associated with sexuality? Why the shame associated with talking about even regular developments that all of us have to go through? How many of us received any kind of information from our parents saying, hey, you will get pubic hair? you will get your period. It's okay to
have a crush.
Have a crush. Oh my God. Yeah. Right? How many of us got that? And I think we deserve to have it, considering you guys and I now know that all of this stuff was normal.
Yes.
I had a crush on somebody at the age of 7 and 8, but nobody told me that that was a crush and that was normal.
Correct. So yeah. For parents, just to remember that we don't have to really attach shame, and it's something that we need to work upon ourselves, have that clarity in our mind before right. we are talking about anything related to sex with our children.
Yeah, and be curious about what makes my kid, you know,
yes.
ask this. Just be curious rather than roll into those tiny, shrivel into those tiny little balls who want to just roll off the, you know, face of this earth.
True.
Yeah.
But when you say be curious, we tend to ask them or find out where is this question rooting from. And won't that push the children back a little bit? That why are you asking me? Who told you about this?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that cause a barrier in the conversation is what I wanted to know.
You're pretty accurate about that. I'm assuming it is coming from experience, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because I've faced that.
Because they also sometimes come with a little bit of hesitation, especially as I said, my son always comes to me and he never goes and asks these questions to his dad. Mm. So if he is having a little bit of hesitation, he's also smiling and telling, oh, you know what, this happened or what is this? Mm-mm-mm. And then if I first go and find out where is it coming from, mm-hmm. would it put him on the back foot and stop him from having an open conversation with me?
May I just quickly tell you that you having established your position in his life as the safe person that he can go to, very well mm-hmm. done.
Okay.
What a good job done. Even if we make mistakes, but because the truth is, Kalyani, you and I are both going to make mistakes as parents, and it's not about being the perfect parent. It is about, again, being curious. What I mean by that is not try and figure out where this question is coming from, but be curious about how can I help my child with most appropriate pieces of information that, you know, they might need at this point. It is important to get to know where this is coming from as well. But I think we first need to satiate their hunger for information before we get into, okay, what made you ask me that question? First, you know, appreciate that they... So, for example, if I were to say, hey, Prabhat, what a great question that is. This is the answer to this question. I wonder, how did it come to you?
So instead of panicking and having that tone in our question, we can just ask the same thing in a better way.
We need to get the sequence right. First, give information.
Yeah. Sequence right and kind of the energy right, because I think our children are smarter than we give them credit for. They know when their parents are awkward as hell. You know, when they're finding it so difficult to give them an answer, they know exactly what's happening. And the minute they don't get that honest response, they know we are fibbing, okay? They know we are BSing. So making it as authentic as you possibly can.
So on that note, should we take the first question?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just read out the question. It says, my son is 4 years old and he's fascinated with his private parts and keeps on touching them.
Mm-hmm.
This puts me in a very awkward position and I don't know how to make him stop.
Isn't that a loaded one right there, right? Hear the awkwardness and the absolute discomfort that this parent is in. But I'm going to say something that might be helpful to them, that it is absolutely normal for your 4-year-old to be touching their private body parts. Yeah, it's developmentally one of the most, you know, quote-unquote normal things to do. They're curious about everything in their world. Why wouldn't they be curious about this body that they inhabit?
But it does put the parent in an awkward spot because you don't want the child to do that in front of everybody.
Sure.
And that's, people correcting him or her.
That's absolutely true. If you don't mind, Kalyani, I would want to spend some time with the awkwardness that the parent is feeling and not the kid. This is exactly how we opened. Why the awkwardness? Because there's shame attached to private body parts. I wonder if the parent has already started talking to the kid about what, you know, their private body parts are called. I think that that's where the awkwardness needs to be addressed first. Yes. Normalizing the private body parts.
Yeah, we call a hand, but we never call vagina or vagina.
A vulva. Yeah, right. A vulva owner is usually a girl, is what we say. I don't want to complicate matters here and get into a spectrum of sexuality and gender. Stuff like that. But I just want this parent to first start off with talking about how private body parts are private. If a child is a penis owner, then telling them that this is your penis, this is your scrotum. And you know what? These are private body parts, including your lips, by the way. Lips are also your private body parts. Very, very important to remember. So, and if this child is a vulva owner, calling, their private body parts what they are, this is a vulva. So you don't necessarily have to name all the parts of a vulva immediately. If you feel like your child is old enough to get it, go ahead, do it. But I'm just saying that it's important to call the private body part what it is. That's number one. One way of dealing with the awkwardness and the shame that you're dealing with to be able to provide safe information for the kid, age-appropriate information for the kid. Number two, what's important for them to also remember is that because this is normal, there doesn't need to be any shame attached to it. And that's the work that the parent will have to do, right? Because this is age-appropriate. This is an age-appropriate sexual development. The awkwardness or the shame is obviously being projected from the parent, and that's something that they have to deal with. And number three.
I think I would like to highlight one small thing related to what you just said. That it's a natural sexual development in a child. I think sexual development only is attached at a certain age.
Yeah.
And that is why we go into a shock as parents if our child is exploring, you know, things about his body at an early age. We don't take it in a positive way because, or we feel it's unnatural because we are associating sex only when you are teens.
Absolutely. So, and just to take from what you just mentioned, thank you for that. Let me put it out there. We are born sexual beings. Human beings are born sexual and die sexual beings, which means we are not deviant. We are not weird. We are not hypersexualized. What we are is sexual beings from the time that we are born to the time that we die, which means old people that you assume to be a certain way. You know, there are certain adjectives that came to my mind. I'm sure that there are certain adjectives that came to your mind when I said old people, but they are also sexual. And even babies are. So what I mean by it is a healthy, you know, sexual development in a child when they do touch their private body parts at the age of 4. Again, our nerve endings as an adult person and as a child are the same. Our nerve endings are present to feel the pleasure, right? So for example, why do you think you need to hold a baby for them to calm down? Because their nerve endings are receiving our touch as something that's calming. Right.
But Parinita, going back to the question,
yes,
how should the parent approach? Because yes, they should educate the child about the names, right names for the body parts. But it can't happen at the same time when this situation is occurring. So what should be their first reaction?
Depending upon how old the child is. I'm assuming there are also other parents listening at a different age group. One very important thing that the parent needs to do is, and this is a very personal opinion that I have, this may not be very freely acceptable to a lot of people, but what I do believe is that if they are in a safe environment, which is if they're in private, you know, if they're not being watched by anybody, like they're independently playing by themselves, they will stop doing it after they're bored, because children have an attention span of you know what.
If you are enjoying this conversation, please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star rating on the platform you're listening to. Thank you.
Right, they will stop on their own. But when it does happen in front of you, it's a 4-year-old. You take a deep breath first, mama, papa, whoever is writing in. Take a deep breath. Remind yourself that this is okay. This is healthy. This is curiosity. And then kind of either distract them by saying, hey, I was thinking of doing this. They will, you know, obviously listen
automatically.
Yeah, they will move away from it. If you see them do it a lot, what's important for us to remember is that there are two ways of looking at it. Number one, this is healthy, but this could also be unhealthy. I will get to that in a bit. But if you see them doing that a lot, you address it. You say that, yeah, I can see that you are touching your penis or you're touching your vulva. It is okay to do so, but there are certain times and places that you do it in. All right? But when there are people around you, private body parts are private body parts. What do you mean by private? They are yours and yours alone. And when you touch your private body parts, that is also very private. I know that it feels good addressing that as well. Because at the end of the day, shaming them for doing what they're doing is going to end up bringing up children like we've grown up to be, right? So, I know that it feels good, but have you ever seen mama or papa do it in front of you? No. So, you have to make sure that you are aware of where you do it. Okay? So, doing it gently, doing it respectfully, for example, the other end of the spectrum would be wherein you hit the child's hand and say, what are you doing? Is this what you're supposed to do? Are you supposed to do that? So the child, you're not telling them why they are not supposed to do it, all right? First of all. And you're not telling them what they did wrong. So how are they supposed to connect with their own bodies? How are they supposed to stay in their bodies when something unsafe is happening to them? And they internalize all this shame. So they are not going to come to you if something horrible is happening to them. If you can make up songs about it, there are songs available, by the way, everywhere.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. There are songs to do with, you know, how to deal with your own private body parts. There are books, in like literally pop-up books talking about what's okay, what's not okay, you know, and what is safe and what is unsafe and stuff like that. Now, I hope that the parent knows that this is masturbation. Them touching their private body parts is kind of masturbation. When we think of masturbation, it is only very, like Himani said earlier, it's very, very, oh, only teenagers do it. Oh, only this is what it means when it happens. But this is kind of the developmentally, you know, appropriate manner in which that they do it. Yeah. So also another thing is, what's important for us to also remember is the safety aspect of it. If too much of it is happening, then there might be a safety related conversation that you might have to have.
They might along with themselves.
Or they are watching somebody do it.
Parinita, thank you for this. I think we really got a different perspective on how to look at kids touching their private body parts. And it's as simple as exploring their bodies like they would explore their mouth, their face, their eyes, their hands, fingers, anything. Absolutely. So it's as normal as that. I think it's a very good starting point for parents to address things related to sex.
Yeah, thank you for this parent who sent in this question, I guess. Yeah.
So the next question, which has been asked by a parent, is about child abuse. She says, every time I read about child abuse, it makes me very anxious, very worried. And obviously, like all parents, I want to keep my child safe in every way possible. What is the most effective way of doing that? They are taught about good touch and bad touch at school and to some extent by us as well. But is that enough?
What an exciting question to dabble with, right? First of all, it is safe and unsafe touch.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. The reason why I say that, because I said that earlier, is because children internalize shame, confusing messages.
So the moment we say bad touch, the pleasure becomes bad and shame. I think then we need to get that jargon also right. It is safe and unsafe.
It is safe and unsafe. It doesn't always mean that pleasure is bad, but it's like they are bad because something happened to them, because we are not talking about pleasure here. Why this jargon is important? Because good and bad are adjectives that we keep giving our children, right? If you eat, you're a good girl. And if you pee in the toilet, you're a good boy, etc., right? So their goodness has been conditional for a long period of time for a lot of us as parents. And what they are internalizing when they hear that is that my goodness is a performance, number one. My badness is also a performance, because even if something happened to me wherein I wasn't the one to blame, I had no control, there was this adult who decided to use their power and my vulnerability for their gain, I still become a bad person because something bad happened to me. Right? So that's why safe and unsafe. Then what happens is when an aunt asks me if she can hug me and I say yes, it's safe. When somebody does not ask me, whether they love me or not, by the way, that's very important to remember. Whether they love me, whether they don't love me, it doesn't matter. When somebody doesn't ask me before giving me a hug, before giving me a kiss, when they're pulling me because they want to give me a hug, etc., that's unsafe. And how do you differentiate that? It does not just have to be a private body part. It needs to start from you and I as parents.
So just, you know, what a common practice that parents do when kids are small and they have this stranger anxiety, and we push them that this is your auntie, say hi. Child doesn't want to say hi. And we push them to do that. And, you know, against their will, against their permission, against their consent. As parents, we know that we are sending our child to a safer place or safer person. But we know that. But we are killing their instinct, natural.
Bodily autonomy. Protection. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they get to decide, right, whether that person is safe or not. You're absolutely right. That's the instinct, right? So I absolutely agree with you. It starts right there. And what I was saying earlier was that it has to start from us. What it means is, if you are giving them a bath, you talk them through it. So, hey, A, I am going to, take your dress off so that we can go into the shower. I am going to take your underwear off because you need to take a bath. You're telling them why. You're walking them through every step. I am going to put soap for you now and we are going to wash it now. Do you want to wash it yourself or would you like me to wash it? There are simple ways in which you can take permission from a child. And the child will give you permission knowing fully well that you are the safe individuals in their lives. There are these small steps that one needs to take. in daily life to educate them about safety when, if this parent who's asked the question is wondering whether this is enough or not. A one-time conversation is never going to be enough. It will have to be these daily smaller steps that you take. For example, if you're in the shower, you say that only mama, papa, grandmom, if they're staying with a grandmom, granddad, if they're staying with granddad, if there's a nanny in place, then, you know, and the nanny, if they're going to school and they're being helped by aunties there, there are very specific people who can do that. And they are either seeing you naked, touching you or your private body parts, only because they need to keep you clean and they need to keep you healthy. For example, a doctor. If a doctor asks you, tells you that they need to give you an injection on your buttocks, it'll be only if mama or papa or somebody who you love and is a safe person for you is in the room. Without us, nobody gets to see your private body parts, because, like I said earlier, private body parts are private. They're yours and yours alone. So if I were to give you a list of things that one needs to talk about when they talk about safe and unsafe, is first of all, you know, again, I cannot harp on this enough. What are the private body parts called in your household? They cannot be called chunnu munnu anymore. They are not, you know, they have to be called by what they are scientifically called. Number one, if your children are able to, you know, grasp the, say, for example, what car engine is in your car, I'm pretty sure they can grasp this stuff. Okay, they come with a different chip and a different software now, our children these days. So they can,
and most importantly, it's okay if they say the same word in the society somewhere.
It is important,
because that's what we're scared of.
It is very important, you know. You just smile at the other adults and say, yeah, you know what, I give them the safety talk very often, so that's how they are so comfortable, you know. Okay, number one. Number two, what does it mean to be safe and unsafe? Even a four-year-old can grasp that. If, for example, what is safe? Why does mama keep your worksheets safely in the cupboard so that they don't get lost, so that they don't get soiled, so that we can find them when we need them? That's safe, right? Why does mama hold your hand when there's a lot of traffic on the street, right? You can think of multiple examples. Like, why do I ask you not to put your finger through a, you know, into the socket? These are conversations we've always had.
Yes.
Right? Now, what's unsafe? Unsafe is when, how do you feel when you're playing downstairs with all your friends and you suddenly realize that mama is not around? How do you feel? My heart rate increases. They'll be able to tell you. You ask them, touch your heart, ask your heart, how is it feeling? Oh, it's going really fast. And what about your tummy? What's happening in your tummy? Oh, it is tumbling. I feel weird. And what about your breath? How are you feeling in your, I'm breathing really fast and I'm so scared. I'm feeling scared. They're able to say that they're scared, but, you know, connecting that to unsafe. That's a conversation that you need to have, which means differentiating between what is safe and what is unsafe. And number three is, how does something become safe and unsafe, right? In the context of child sexual abuse specifically, or safety, like we are talking, you be very clear with them, right? You say, if anybody touches or asks to show your private body parts, it is unsafe. So what you do is you'd run away. You scream, hey, don't do that, or hey, stop. You basically ask them to do exactly what you don't normally ask them to do in regular life, which is attract attention. Hey, stop, don't do that. And you run away. You run away to a person who you feel safe with. Okay, that's number one. If somebody shows their private body parts, ask them to touch it, not okay. it's a situation where even if you don't feel unsafe, it is unsafe for you. That's a difference that one of us, I mean, you know, you might have to be specific about. Even if it doesn't feel unsafe, it is unsafe for you. Because mama is telling you that it's not okay for somebody to do it. Anybody showing you videos or photographs of people who are naked, not okay. So what you do is you say, you scream stop. So you can be playful here and you can be like, how will you say stop? What's the loudest voice that you can use to say stop? Who will you go to in school? Oh, I will go to Sandra, teacher in school. Excellent. So you as a parent, talk to Sandra, teacher, and tell her that, hey, I have had the personal safety conversation with my child and I need you to know that they might come to you if they are in any kind of trouble related to personal safety, and please get in touch with me if they come to you, and always listen to my child.
So we basically go and complete the loop.
100% loops have been left unlooped for years on end, and that's where our children are unsafe. They just assume that there are loops that are open-ended, open, right?
Yeah.
So you close the loop. That's the most important. So what all did we say? Right names of private body parts. We said that you talk about the distinction of safe and unsafe with them.
Right.
Connect with their bodies. Very, very important. When you're feeling safe, how do you feel? When you're feeling unsafe, how do you feel? How does it feel when mama gives you a hug? How does it feel when papa gives you a kiss? Consent. Very, very important. If your child...
Yeah, we spoke about
that. Right.
Subsystem.
If your child doesn't want to hug somebody, if your child doesn't want to kiss somebody, if your child doesn't want to say hi to somebody, leave them alone, for God's sake. They are exercising their body or bodily autonomy. Would you tell your partners, go, give this auntie a kiss? Would you tell an adult that? No, you wouldn't. You know why? Because you respect their bodily autonomy. So just start respecting your children. Another last point that I will stop at, I promise, is that get a list out of people who are safe people for them. A four-year-old might not be able to say that this is who I feel safe with, but you probably appoint a few people who you know are safe.
Right.
Yes. So at least one or two in every environment they visit. Maybe a school, a daycare, the playground, the society.
Yes. The truth is that we as parents have to do our bit, but sometimes our children do get an unsafe situation. That's not on you. That's something that parents need to remember. That if you do what needs to be done, and if children do get into unsafe situations, that's unsafe.
They should know how to react. And that is our job, to train them to
And I'm so sorry that
respond in the correct way.
Absolutely. And I'm so sorry that this unfortunate situation might come up. But...
yeah.
And close the loop with these individuals and let them know that they are their safe people and they need to get in touch with you.
Right.
Now, moving on to the next question. It comes from a father and he's written to us saying that from cartoons to movies, songs and even some books, kissing on the lips has become a common thing nowadays. And that's why my daughter had asked me a few times as to why I kiss her only on the cheeks. To which I answered, that's the way it is in our family. But just last week, she caught me and my wife kissing on the lips. And we were unaware that the door was open and she just barged in. We've not had a conversation since that incident happened. And now I'm not sure what should I say to her.
Oh, what a beautiful question. And what a lovely, involved, caring father this person is. You know, to actually hold on to this thought for a while and figuring it out, figuring out how to say it. What a lovely thing. What an involved dad. Like I mentioned earlier, I don't know, other than your sexual organs, your lips are also your private body parts. Something that you need to teach your children. Another thing is, what's kissing? How are you going to describe that to a child? It's something that you do with people you love, all right? And this parent has done a really good job wherein he has mentioned that it's a familial rule that we don't kiss each other on the lips. But I don't think he has told the kid why. Because it's a, if they would have,
because you don't know how to do that. And if your child accepts one answer, we don't go in the deep. If they don't accept that answer, keep on questioning, that it's only when we have to go deeper and reveal more things.
Exactly.
And now we try to give close-ended answers so that they don't ask more questions,
Right?
We also have that trick,
Of course, absolutely, right? Like I said earlier, if the child has asked you this question, they are owed an honest answer. For example, if they want to address, them being so-called caught kissing each other, they have to give this kid a very honest answer. I wonder how old the kid is. So it might differ for different ages, but the crux of the situation is going to be that mama and papa kiss each other because we want to show each other how much we love each other. And this I have reserved, or we have reserved, only for each other. We kiss each other to show each other how much we love each other. And this is only for mama and papa that, we kiss on the lips. I show you how much I love you by giving you so many kisses on your cheek. By giving you so many tickles, like I become a tickle monster and I tickle you. When I become a tickle monster and you ask me to tickle you and I tickle you. When I pick you up and give you those tight, squeezy hugs, I show you how much I love you. But kissing on the lips is only for mama. And mama will kiss me only when she wants to show papa how much she loves me.
I think as a parent, what you're most scared of is, will my child go and try this on somebody else?
Because I have had these conversations, kind of, not so specific, but when they have a liking towards, a kid of in the opposite sex or the same sex also, they will ask, can I marry him or her? And if we say that, yeah, you may, then it is almost giving them, okay, then maybe I can kiss that person also, just to show how much I love you, just like mom and dad do. Because they are married.
Absolutely.
So it's like, it's a scary area to deal with. And to differentiate between the kind of love that parents or couple has for each other as against, what you have for friends, what you have for your child.
That's such an important thing that you've said, Himani, because that's a conversation also that you need to have with your kids. So when they ask you if they can marry their friends, you can say, of course. But one can marry somebody when they become older. But what this conversation is also making me think is that kissing and marriage, and can they kiss only after marriage and the whole thing, okay? So that's a different thing altogether. I understand that we don't have the time today to talk about that, but I just wanted to let you know that that's another conversation to have, that of course you can marry anybody you want, or you can love anybody that you want, okay? But marrying somebody means you have to be older, right?
Okay.
But can you kiss people on their lips? What have I told you? Lips are private body parts. If they are your private body parts, they are other people's private body parts. So are you allowed to touch them?
No.
Is somebody else allowed to touch your private? So I'm sorry, if you really love a friend of yours, what I suggest you do is ask them if you can give them a hug. Or give them a high five. Or give them
maybe a flying kiss. Yeah.
Maybe we can open up other ways of showing affection. Invite them home, make a greeting card for them, cook for them, something.
So define the boundaries and define what you can do with what set of people.
Yeah. And that's a whole lot of work, isn't it? That's where
absolutely because where we usually get stuck is to understand, to you know, link between loving and action and showing the love. So that's and you know, to it's very difficult to make them understand the difference between the love for different relationships. So I think
absolutely,
you know, we if we set boundaries like you had said, tell them or show them different ways of expressing their love, I think that's nice. Parinita, going back to the second question, I think I missed something and the thought that I was holding on to. When, you know, people come home, uncles, aunties, they tickle the kid. Because that's the friendly way of, you know, gelling with the child. Form a relationship. They're making the child laugh. The child is deceived, I feel, sometimes. What, as parents, you know, how should we approach this? Because we are in a spot. It personally makes me uncomfortable when my daughter is tickled by anyone whom I'm not comfortable with. Or is it even unsafe? Can you throw some light on that?
Okay. What an important question, Himani. Thanks so much for asking me this. Can I start off with something that's going to be really tough for you to hear?
Sure.
You can tell people who come into your house not to tickle your child.
I'm just curious to know that if the child is comfortable, should we still stop people from doing that?
Okay, let me put it this way. You know, especially because we are humans, we are social beings, we need family, we need people. And yeah, it is scary to sort of, you know, have these kind of conversations with people you think are important, etc. And so how I would address the situation, Himani, is that number one, I watch my child. Just because a child is laughing does not mean that they are okay. Because again, like I mentioned earlier, all of us have similar nerve endings. If you tickle a child, they will laugh. But them laughing does not mean they're feeling unsafe. They might be hyper aroused. Even when they are being tickled and laughing, we know whether they want it to be done or not. As parents. Because there's a certain body language that comes with feeling uncomfortable. If you see that your child is unsafe, you ask the person to stop. You physically go up to them, hold the child's hand, gently and very respectfully move them aside and say, I think this made them uncomfortable. Or I could see that they wanted it to stop, so I'm taking them inside so that they can take a few deep breaths. Or I could see it in their face that they were uncomfortable. Because as a family, we have a rule that we don't tickle our child unless they ask to be tickled and they have to say stop, or they have to say enough. This is also something that you need to have a conversation with your children about. And so if an adult who they don't know very well, or they know very well, even you, for example, let me give an example of this morning. I went and gave my child a kiss on the back because they were facing, their back was faced towards me, and I just wanted to be playful and I wanted to give them a like tight kiss, and they turned around and said, Mama, don't do that again. What you take back sometimes is, oh my God, does my child not love me? Or does my child feel unsafe with me? But no, my child was literally drawing safety boundaries with me when they wanted me to announce before I gave them a kiss.
Right.
Similarly, to do with tickling. If this person doesn't know them or they know them, it's important to establish these rules. It's important for you to be the spokesperson for your child, because there's a clear power dynamic that is happening here. An adult is not going to come and tickle you, the adults in the family, to forge a relationship with you, will they? No, they will do that to a child because they have the power to do that. They have a power to rough up a child. They have a power to hold that child quickly or just lift them up. But it's important for you to be the spokespersons, for you to be the safety people for your child and say, hey, I don't think they like that. Hey, can you stop that? Because, you know, we've had a safety conversation with them and they're giving me a look that tells me that they're feeling unsafe. is the adult.
Because it's difficult to even come up with these kind of sentences which are polite enough and yet send a message across. So thank you for that.
And the power of no and their ability to use that in the right place, I think we should respect that, because and we all know that it is the most important, one of the most important things to say.
Yeah, but again, that will have to start at home. When they say no means no, when you say no means no, which means that if they don't want to finish their meal, no means no. If they haven't finished their meal and they want to go for chips later, no means no.
It's so interesting that how a small conversation related to, say, food, our daily conversations are somehow related to or have their percolation effect right up to the way we manage our sexuality, sex conversations,
consent,
to even
body
abuse.
Autonomy, all of it, right? Yeah.
So much what we discussed today is otherwise also applicable to other aspects of parenting and not just having sex related conversations. So thank you 100%. So much, Parinita, for these wonderful conversations, wonderful ways of handling difficult situations for us as parents. I think it's going to be useful for many others, and although we've answered only 3 questions today, I think we've answered a whole lot of other questions which which might be troubling parents. So thank you once again for that.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor.
Thanks a lot, Parinita.
Thank you.
In our next episodes, we'll be covering the topic of how to raise emotionally intelligent children, positive discipline versus punishments, and much more. So loads and loads of helpful content coming your way with amazing experts from the industry. And in order not to miss out on any of this, please subscribe to us on the app you're listening to and follow us on social media at Partners in Upbringing on Instagram and Facebook.
See you next time with another guest discussing about another interesting topic. Until then, goodbye, stay safe, and happy parenting.
Happy parenting.
The content of this podcast is the copyright of the makers of this podcast, Partners in Upbringing. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered as professional advice unless stated. Please refer to https://www.partnersinupbringing.com for further details.